This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
It's an honor to welcome to this program David Kirby. He is one of the nation's leading investigative journalists. His most recent book is Evidence of Harm, Mercury in Vaccines and the Autism Epidemic. You can learn a great deal online at evidenceofharm.com. David joins us on the long line from New York. David, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good. How's your summer going?
So far, cold and rainy.
Yeah. Now, what's the weather like in New York today? You got some good weather today, I hope.
I wouldn't call it good, no.
I'm sorry.
Like usual. We have had a completely sunless June.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. We've had our share of that down here, just rain, but we got lucky today.
Oh, I'm happy for you.
David Kirby, of course, posts the latest news on autism frequently to HuffingtonPost.com. And David, what is the latest? I've been reading your work, and I understand that they're finally, at long last, the government looks like they're finally ready to fund some real studies that might shed some light on autism.
I think the government is ready to finally admit that there are environmental components to many, if not most, autism cases, and that it's not a purely genetic disorder. And the reason why the numbers are going up is not purely because of better diagnostics and wider criteria. I think that explains some of the explosion, but not all of it. My sense is there's a growing consensus among scientists, particularly in government, that we just haven't looked very closely at these environmental triggers and what they might be and how they might interact with certain genetic predispositions. And when it comes to the most controversial possible trigger of all, vaccinations, there are some gaps left in our knowledge and some studies that haven't been done that need to be done, to sort of settle the debate one way or the other. And even if and there are many people in government who now do support vaccine autism research, that doesn't mean they think there's a connection, but it does mean they agree that there are gaps in research and there are unanswered questions. And if we're going to expect parents to give their kids this full battery of vaccines, we have to have these answers in hand. So that's all good news. And some of the studies that have been approved or recommended are really something that I have been saying for years should be done, and parents have been saying so, and some scientists have been saying so, and we now see very, very mainstream scientists within the health bureaucracy agreeing that this research should get done.
We're talking with David Kirby, author of Evidence of Harm. He's online at evidenceofharm.com. He's one of the nation's leading investigative journalists. We're honored to have him back on the program. David, before we talk about some of the studies to watch and some of the really important ones that we want to keep an eye on, give us a sort of fill us in of the politics of this whole issue, because I know a few years ago when I was sitting with a United States senator, he looked me right in the eye and said, there are very powerful forces in Washington that don't want autism studied. And they're working hard behind the scenes to prevent any money spent on studies on autism.
Well, that train is out of the station, so they failed because the government is going ahead. With the new administration, I just think too early to read them exactly where they're going with this. Obama has, on one hand, in their health agenda or medical agenda, autism was virtually the only actual disorder named, and they went into a lot of specifics, including finding the causes of autism and treating it, which they didn't do for cancer or heart disease or diabetes or anything else. So that's good. On the other hand, they've done very little, really, vis-a-vis autism, although NIH is starting to do some, and some of the new stimulus money will be going into autism research, but Obama has yet to appoint an autism czar, which some people thought might happen, at least by now. I think people are willing to give him a little more time. He's been rather busy with a lot of things, but listen, autism is a pressing crisis just like everything else.
Yeah, yeah.
There are at least two issues that have now come before his administration vis-a-vis vaccines and autism. The Supreme Court asked the administration to weigh in on a lawsuit against a drug company for thimerosal, which the Georgia Supreme Court, I believe it was, said could proceed. And the drug makers appealed it and went to the Supreme Court because the drug makers said, no, this has to be adjudicated in the federal vaccine court. And the Supreme Court asked the White House to weigh in on that. I just heard back from the Justice Department today that they don't know when or if they are going to do that, but they have been asked by the Supreme Court to weigh in on that issue. And Representative Carolyn Maloney and Representative Christopher Smith from New York and New Jersey, respectively, sent a letter recently to Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius, asking her whether some of the stimulus money that I just mentioned, not for vaccine research, but actually for vaccine procurement, I think it was $30 million set aside to buy vaccines for poor communities and children who are underserved or underinsured, to use maybe 5 to 15 million of that, 5 to 20 million. You know what, I'm not telling this right.
It's 300 million.
Thank you. It's $300 million. And right. they were asking if some of that money could be used to fund a vaccinated versus unvaccinated study.
Which is one of the big studies that is remaining to be done, which would look at a vaccinated population and an unvaccinated population to look for any patterns vis-a-vis autism.
Autism and other outcomes. And also vaccinated, unvaccinated, and alternatively vaccinated populations. And that's what the National Vaccine Advisory Committee, which is the nation's foremost body when it comes to vaccine policy, to advise HHS, they just voted unanimously to recommend a feasibility study of doing such a study, because such a study would be complicated and expensive. There are certain ethical questions involved with it. But these scientists who advise HHS on vaccine policy, along with a lot of other serious vaccine autism research recommendations, did recommend that they mentioned the Institute of Medicine might be the right place to at least look into the feasibility of doing these vaccinated, unvaccinated studies. And it would not just be in populations, obviously using parents who already had decided not to vaccinate their kids, although they would urge the parents to vaccinate their kids, but those that didn't could enroll in the study. But also to look at laboratory models and animal models to see how certain vaccine ingredients and the vaccine schedule itself might affect, again, animal models or even at the cellular or molecular level.
We're talking with award-winning investigative journalist David Kirby. His book is Evidence of Harm, and it's online at evidenceofharm.com. We're honored to have him on the program. So any other studies that have been authorized that came across your desk that you think are really important for us to keep an eye on?
Yeah, absolutely. There are three now that are underway, that are enrolling patients and are pretty exciting. There's the National Children's Health Study done by HHS and the EPA. They're in the process of enrolling 100,000 kids who they're going to follow throughout, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years of life, which may seem like a long time, but we'll start getting data in before then, I hope. And they will be looking at all kinds of outcomes, including autism and other neurological disorders, and all kinds of exposures, including vaccines, including mercury vaccines, including background mercury, other heavy metals exposures. So that's a very good thing. The CDC itself has a thimerosal-specific study, thimerosal being the vaccine ingredient given to, that was in the childhood schedule, the preservative thimerosal, which is still in many flu shots that pregnant women and small children get. And they'll be looking at thimerosal exposures both in infants and also prenatally. And then finally, the most recently announced study, which I think is very exciting, the early study, EARLI, being done by NIH and a number of NIH agencies. They're going to enroll 1,200 children, but they're going to start with pregnant women. They're asking pregnant women who already have an autistic child, a child with autism, to enroll in this study and to be followed both prenatally and for the first 2 years of the child's life, measuring just about everything you can imagine, from household products to healthcare products to vaccinations to background mercury to dental amalgams to even thimerosal in over-the-counter products like contact lens solution and other products that you can go get in your drugstore tomorrow.
Hey, David, for folks who don't know, what do you mean by background mercury?
Background mercury would be environmental mercury. A lot of it comes from coal-fired power plants. It could be inhaled. It could be somehow exposure through soil, especially children playing in soil. And, of course, probably the most common form is by eating seafood with mercury in it. Most small children don't eat large amounts of seafood, not in this country, or at least I guess Asian cultures do more. But it is another source of mercury exposure.
We're talking with David Kirby, award-winning investigative journalist, the latest on autism. We're honored to have him on the program. And for David, for the folks who are new to this issue and don't know why so many of these studies come back to mercury specifically, tell us why that is of particular interest when it comes to studying the etiological studies about autism.
Well, without getting into too much of the science, there is evidence to suggest that what we see in the brains and the chemical profiles of some people with autism mimics what we see in certain laboratory and animal studies looking at mercury exposures. Mercury can cause things like an imbalance in cytokines, the immune system chemicals that balance the immune system. It can cause things like oxidative stress and neuroinflammation. It attacks things like mitochondria. And when we look at people with autism, we see things like oxidative stress and neuroinflammation and, in a certain subset, problems with mitochondria. Now, mercury is not the only thing that can cause all of those, but it does belong on the list of suspects. And I think there are researchers, even who reject a vaccine connection, who still concede there might be an association between heavy metals and autism. Certainly, when the debate first got going and the parents looked at the symptoms of mercury poisoning, there is quite a bit of crossover between some symptoms of mercury poisoning and some symptoms of autism. But it's really important to remember there is no such thing as mercury poisoning disease. There is a vast galaxy of outcomes from mercury exposure, depending on the type of exposure, the route of exposure, the amount of exposure, things like that. So we have everything from Mad Hatter's disease to Minamata disease to what used to be called pink disease, which had a lot of crossover with autism. It affected children who use mercury in their teething powder. So both the symptomology and some of the actual biochemistry we're now learning, there are reasons to believe it. And then there are epidemiological studies, such as studies in Texas looking at school districts near coal-fired power plants, and a CDC-funded study in the San Francisco Bay Area where they looked at 19 different birth tracks in that area and found that children born in the most polluted tracks were like 50% more likely to have an autism diagnosis. And they looked at a number of heavy metals and solvents, and they said the heavy metals in particular were most highly associated with the increase autism, and mercury was first on the list, as well as cadmium and a couple of other metals that have to go back and look. But a CDC-funded study said there may be an association between environmental mercury exposure and autism. So the other thing is that mercury exposures have increased exponentially in the last 10 or 20 years. A lot of it from the Far East, a lot of it from very dirty coal that gets burned over there but does get carried all the way across the ocean in the form of plumes, and it will come down in the form of rain, and we see the areas in the United States with the highest levels of mercury deposition tend to be areas that receive a lot of rainfall.
We're talking with David Kirby. His book is Evidence of Harm. David, we really have we reached this new era of research in autism when we see all these new studies now being funded? Have we sort of turned a corner?
I think we have. Like I said, at the beginning, I think this consensus is building that there is an increase and that it is environmentally caused. And we are now in a race to find those things. And you can even, I mean, put vaccines aside for a minute and just look at the heavy metals, look at live viruses, look at other pollutants, look at paternal age and sperm. You know, male sperm is an endangered species in this world, and it's very frightening. We need to look at that. We need to look at everything, and I think we're going to look at everything. I wish we were doing it more quickly. I wish we were 5 years into it. But we're going to do it, and we will find the answers, because I believe there are environmental triggers, and we'll find out that different kids were probably triggered by different things. And we probably, you know, leading to different health problems that different subsets of kids have. So I'm very optimistic. I know that the vaccine wars will rage on no matter what they find, and that's just the nature of the beast. But our knowledge will move forward. And, you know, if we do then start to realize that maybe these kids are toxic, that their detox systems are not working properly, that their metabolism and immune systems are irregular, that their mitochondria may not be working properly, that they have underlying problems that badly need attention, we can pay attention to those things, because when we do, at least anecdotally, these kids seem to get better. And to me, what's more important than that? Yes, we need to find the cause. Yes, we need to fix blame. Yes, there may be litigation, compensation, however you want to put it. But if we can start making kids getting better now, then I think this environmental research is really cause for a lot of hope and optimism.
Absolutely. David, before we let you go, I understand that you are at work on a new book, which is destined for the bestseller list, let's be honest. And tell us, tell our listeners what you've been writing about.
I have been writing about basically the way we produce protein in this country these days. Mass-produced industrial-style factory farming, most people refer to. Eggs, poultry, beef, pork, and, of course, dairy, the vast majority of which is now produced in large facilities where the animals are confined to small areas, large numbers of animals in very small areas, creating all kinds of issues and environmental problems, including what to do with all of that stuff that comes out the other end of the animals in such large concentrations, and what it does to neighboring communities and local health issues. Basically, the impact of factory farming on the environment and also on humans in terms of human health, in terms of economic activity, and in terms of food safety. And there's lots of reasons to believe that things like MRSA and swine flu may have emerged or partly emerged from factory farming, and it's an issue we're going to have to deal with. And it's an interesting issue, and we all eat, and you know, unless you're 100% vegan, you consume animal products, and if average animal product, again, was produced in this industrialized fashion, which comes with other consequences. And the book tells a story, much like Evidence of Harm, of average Americans who were affected by these facilities and set out to try to bring more regulation and try to prevent them from harming their local communities, because, as we revealed in the book, they have. And there's a lot more science to back up that contention.
And when does this book due out?
Well, anywhere between late fall and early of 2010. I would say sometime between November and February. I don't think the exact date has been set.
There you go. David Kirby is online at evidenceofharm.com. David, thank you so much for joining us. I've really enjoyed it.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.